presentations, the dramas that we've seen, but that's okay. We're not in competition with any of those. It's just that somehow you remove your heart and your mind and you go there. And you see yourself at the table. You see yourself with the conversation of what's going on. Because without it, it's like watching somebody else's life. You can feel for them and you can empathize with them, but you know, you don't get involved. It's like watching that proverbial movie. Oh, everything's happening and it may stir you and it may even get emotional, but it doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't affect you. It doesn't move you. There's not going to be the fingerprint of that moment left on your life. So that's the struggle that we have right now. Father, bless your word. Bless it in the context of what we're going to do today and this incredible example that Jesus gave the disciples, but also obviously gave to us as his future disciples. In Jesus' name, and now in the reading, the word says, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments. He took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Then he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, Lord, are you washing my feet? Jesus answered and said to him, what I am doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this. Peter said to him, you shall never wash my feet. But Jesus answered him, if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. So Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not only my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, he who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not all of you. For he knew who would betray him. Therefore he said, you are not all clean. So when he had washed their feet and taken his garment and sat down again, he said to them, do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. More assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who was sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. Now, this is on the eve of his betrayal. Literally less than hours later, he would be arrested. He would be betrayed, obviously. He would be beaten. And then ultimately, he would be crucified. All of this happened in that context. And Jesus illustrated his servanthood through humbly washing the feet of his disciples. Now, it's hard for us to wrap our minds around that image because we don't do that anymore. Now, there's a lot of churches that still do that. It may be a formal announcement. When I got saved, I didn't know anything of this. I didn't grow up in church, you know, that did that stuff. I grew up in a church where you went in, you dipped your hand in the water, you made the sign of the cross, you were quiet or you got thumped, and you sat there, and it was the masses were still in Italian at that time, so I couldn't understand anything the priest was saying. So I'm not faulting the church by any means, but there wasn't a connection. And I certainly didn't grow up with the washing the feet thing, but I heard of some people that did. They said, yeah, we used to have foot washings. Now, that was back in Alabama. You don't have foot washings. You got foot washings because we drive cars, and we go to fars. That's the type of thing. But they had foot washings down there, and they said they would advertise it, and all the women would know not to wear their pantyhose that day because they were going to have foot washing, all right? So it was amazing. As a matter of fact, I was talking to John and Jen about this, and Al, I said, man, I said, Lord, he has led this on me. And he said, I'll be honest with you, at that point, I don't know if he wants me to do that or have it done or whatever. And they were getting nervous. Because I think, and I asked Jen, I said, how about I just, and she said, uh-uh. I think she was just firmly just putting her feet on the ground going, I think they're going to stay in my shoes. Matter of fact, today I saw her and I said, you know, she told me, she said, John got up this morning, put on a bright red shirt. She rebuked him sternly, and he changed his shirt. Now, I guess that has a green stripe, which makes it legal. I looked at her, and I said, I don't see anything green. She went digging for something down in the foot of her shoe, and it is wet. Anyway, I don't think I want to go with her feet today after seeing that. So I'm trying to disarm this without losing the respect that is due to this moment. But you and I don't know how to deal with this because it wasn't even something that we're associated with. If you were to go to a foot washing today and it was formally announced, and even if we broke out and did it today, it would just be so weird that you would probably be so taken back by the act that you wouldn't be able to embrace the spiritual significance of it. And that's just the truth of where we are in our life. But at that time, foot washing was very customary as a hospitality act. You see, they wore sandals. They walked everywhere they went. And obviously, if you had open shoes like that, like sandals are, the dirt and, you know, the sweat, the perspiration, everything would just get those feet real nice and dirty. Nothing else to get them real nice and dusty. When you went to somebody's house, it was customary that they would either provide water for you to wash your feet. Most of the time, if they had the means to do it, there was a servant there that would come, and it was his job to host you and to serve you in that capacity. Today, you know, probably the customary thing that we have is a handshake that replaces the holy kiss of the Bible. But also, if you were to come over to my house, probably one of the first things I would do is say, would you like something to drink? Would you like a Coca-Cola? Would you like water? Whatever. You know, we have these customary things that we're associated with too, and they're hospitable acts that we serve for other people. But on this occasion, he was leaving a living example for his disciples to follow. Now, it's interesting, you read a lot of things, and I never would have thought about this, but he said, you know what, if you were going to set the room up for this whole thing, there was going to be this opportunity to foot washing, wouldn't you have also provided a servant to do that, unless, of course, you were going to do it among yourselves? So Jesus knew what he was going to do. Jesus knew the example he wanted to give his disciples. You can't leave the fact that this is on the eve of his arrest. He's going to die soon. You know, you do the important things last. You say the important stuff last. You make sure that when things are going to come to a complete close, that you get everything that you need to say, everything that you need to do, everything that you want done beyond that. If it's an impact, if it's something you want somebody to do, you get it in then. This is not mixed up with Jesus' ministry somehow as he left Galilee and went over here and he was in Bethesda. No, this is right there in the midst on the eve of when he was going to be betrayed. He was illustrating the importance of serving and the value of humility. And we as Christians, we embrace those words so quickly, but I'm not too sure that we embrace them in the way that we do it. This was something he was doing for them so they could see it, so they could experience it. If you've ever done something with somebody, a job, and you've seen them do that job, 9 times out of 10, you can repeat that job because you saw it. Now, you may have to have a little bit of refresher or whatever, and it may take you longer than what they did in their experience or whatever, but because you've seen it, you can do it. If you ever driven somewhere and you were the passenger, whether you were taking a nap or not, you weren't paying attention, and they drove somewhere, and now it's your turn to drive there, and you're going, I don't remember where I'm going. Nothing looks familiar because you weren't in the driver's seat. But if you pay attention closely, you'll be able to retrace those tracks because you've been there. And that's what he did for the disciples. There was no lecture, just an example to follow. No lecture, just an example to follow. I'm going to show a little poem to you that's up on the screen, and I hope that maybe you'll research it and that you'll write this down somewhere. It's a very powerful poem. It points out this illustration so powerfully. It says this, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather you go with me than merely point the way. The eye is a more ready pupil than ever was the ear. Instruction sometimes confusing, but example always clear. This book speaks to us in volumes. But so often, sometimes the words, even the first part of this scripture, I started to omit some of it, but I said, no, this is a part of the whole picture. And even though it's a bunch of words, sometimes it's very easy to get confused in all of the word and all the verbiage. But when you see the end product and you see that thing done, you go, now I can redo that. Because it's something I saw. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I think we would all agree with that. You know, in 1952, most of us will remember this name, Dr. Albert Schweitzer. He was a missionary over to Africa, spent years and years over there. In 1952, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. And as such, when he returned to the United States in 1953, he was coming into a Chicago train station. There was a huge reception for him. Everybody was there to interview him. They were going to put his picture in the paper, everything. He was 6'4", so he just stood head and shoulders above the crowd. And as he got off the train, he was immediately just swamped by this crowd of people. And quickly, he dismissed himself. He said, excuse me. He worked his way through the crowd, and he went over to this elderly black lady who was trying to take her luggage and get onto a bus. And as he went over there, he helped her onto the bus, wished her a good day, came back over to the crowd, and he says, I'm sorry. He said, forgive me. He said, where were we? And one of the reporters said this, that's the first time I've ever seen a sermon walking. First time I've ever seen a sermon walking. Wouldn't it be great if our lives were a living, two-foot, two-legged, regardless of how tall you are, walking sermon? That would be powerful, wouldn't it? Because people can follow that example, but you can tell them, you can instruct them, you can do whatever you want to. That's what they need to do. So what did Jesus do? Here's what Jesus did. He walked in there, and he says, the Bible says he took off his outer garments. Now, some of us have a little trouble with what all that means, because sometimes we're a little confused that it means a little bit more than light we like to see. But Jesus was not naked. They usually wore an undergarment that was under their outer garment. So he removed that, and then he began to wash their feet. He had a basin, and I'm sure it wasn't anything like that, but here's the thing that he did. He immediately associated with the role of a servant. He took that outer garment on, saying, listen, you know, I want you to see a change. I want you to see something different real quick. He could have done it in his garment. I'm sure it would have had the same effect. But you see, there was a servant role that needed to be played, and he needed to be dressed like a servant. So he took on that role. No, it wasn't role reversal. He didn't say, okay, you guys be the teacher, I'll be the student. You guys be the rabbi, I'll be the follower. No, and it wasn't one of those undercover boss things either, where he's trying to slip under there and try to see if they'll warm up right or whatever. No, he did this as the rabbi. He did this as the Messiah. He did this as the Son of God. He did this as the anointed one, as Peter said earlier in his ministry. He did this because he wanted to make sure that they understood, I am taking on the role of a servant. I'm not doing this in any other way. But as a servant, I am not leaving who I am. I'm still the Son of God. And when we follow his example, there may need to be some emphasis on who we are at that moment, but we don't forget who we are. God has called us to be those kind of people. I'll never forget this story about Ronald Reagan. When he was shot, I believe it was 1981 when he was shot. I'm not exactly sure. I don't remember. But in the hospital, he had accidentally spilt a cup of water. When the nurses came in, not because of that, but just in a regular reason, they saw President Reagan, who had been wounded, who was recovering from this shot, of this wound, was on the floor on all fours in his hospital gown mopping it up because he had made a mess. Now, here's the President of the United States, and maybe that type of attitude is why we kind of like him. There's a lot of people that admire him, regardless of whether you're on the other side of the aisle from his politically. There was a type of person that he was. As the President of the United States, he said, you know, I made a mess. I need to clean it up. That's not role reversal. That's just doing the right thing. And Jesus took on the role of a servant so that we also would have that permission. If the people, the upper-ups, if you would, if all they ever do is do upper-up stuff, you'd begin to resent them, wouldn't you? You'd never be able to follow their example, for sure. And you know what? There would just be this attitude that would be attached to who they are and what they do. But Jesus said, you know what? I'm going to become a servant. But also, he began to wash their feet. Now, let's stop and think about the act right there. He washed their feet. Now, I don't care how customary it was or not. It was a dirty job. It was a job that was left for servants, if possible. But Jesus went through the physical motion of taking their feet into his hand, pouring water over it, and then taking the towel that he had around him and wiping their feet off so that their feet would no longer be dirty but would be clean. There's actions that we need to have in our life that speak for us, louder than the resume, bigger than all of the little initials that follow our name on our badge. But there needs to be something that says, you know what, we're a servant. All of you know how that goes, man. You know, there's some people you go to, and, you know, I know you really don't want to talk about this, but it's tax season. Aren't you just thrilled to death? And we have to rely on some people that are tax savvy. All I know how to do is accumulate taxes. That's about as far as I get when I really understand them or what to do with them. But I have to go to somebody. You know what? I don't want them to treat me like I'm an idiot. I don't want to have to go in there and say, okay, here it is, just phone me with the results. I mean, that's really the way I'd like to do it, to be honest with you, because I just want to get it behind me. But I want somebody to embrace it. I want them to ask questions. I want them to help me understand that I'm doing the right thing. I want them to find a loophole. I want them to find a way for me not to have to pay somebody. You know what? That means that they care for me. Now, I wanted them to do it legally, you know. You know how that goes. But if they're so up and go, you know what, I'm this big official, I know all of this stuff, you just come to me and just end up and just live with the results. Nobody likes that. It was the physical act. Do you not think it spoke to those disciples when Jesus left where he was at the table, because they were together at that point, took off his outer garment, took this basin of water, and took this towel and began to wash their feet, that things changed in a hurry? They probably didn't know what to do with the matter of fact. They probably were a little astonished. They were probably looking at each other. We know that there were some things going on that evening that were just a little different, because even when they started talking about betraying him, they were looking at each other and going, is it me? Is it me? Is it me? Is it me? I mean, there's a couple of things they didn't know. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. There was a confusing moment, but it really got confusing when the Lord and Master, the guy that walked on water, the guy that raised Lazarus from the dead, the guy who said, I will be dead myself and raised in 3 days, all of this stuff, stooped and got on his hands and knees and washed their feet. That's an act, I guarantee you, they will never, ever, ever forget. And then there's the position. It's the position that we assume. Sometimes we have to literally, physically lower ourselves into a position to where people can receive what we have to say. You know, I think it was Francis of Assisi who said this. He said, preach the gospel, and when necessary, use words. When necessary, use words. Jesus was preaching a huge sermon, and all he was doing was with his hands and a basin of water and a towel around his neck. I have this little caricature that I just love. I used to coach Little League. I coached Craig's Little League football. I coached Casey's little softball teams. They never were any good. I think we know why. But somebody gave this to me, and it was just really cool, and I've had it up on my shelf ever since, because, you know, here's the coach. And he's stooping, got his hands on his knees. He's getting down on eye level with this kid. Because, you know, you can say it up here, but they'll hear it down here. You can scream it up here, but until you get down here, they're not going to listen to it. I don't want to be sacrilegious with this, but it cracks me up when I go by some of the Sunday school classrooms and I see Leland and Di over here in these little bitty chairs that were designed for pygmies. I mean, and less than that, to be honest with you. They're just a little bitty. Leland's knees come up over his ears, you know, and they're over there, and they're just helping these kids with crayons and stuff. I see Sandy Kistler over there behind that little desk. And she's handing out goldfish left and right. So if your kids have a stomach ache, it's her fault. It's just cool when that happens. And I try to remember as often as I can, if I'm visiting one of our kids and just messing around in the hallway, I'll try to either get low or maybe even get down to my hands and knees or whatever. And sometimes we have lost the value of just getting on your rear end, on the floor, and just let the mess prevail with your grandkids or kids or whatever. But at work, the same thing happens. You may be grown adults here, but you know what? Every now and then, leave your stoop, leave your little ledge of authority, and once you get down there and get dirty with those people. Once you get down there where they really listen and they understand and they realize that, you know, you've done a lot more than just boss them around today. You have led them by example. Larry Brummett, you hear me talk about Pastor Brummett all the time. His son died when he was 48 years old. That was 13 years ago. He was the CEO of One Oak. And at that time, man, the most incredible compliment he ever got was that everybody from the mailroom up there to the 12th or 13th, 14th floor, wherever it was his office was, they knew Larry Brummett because he was always down there seeing how they were doing. You see, he started down there. He started about being in the field, and he understood what that was like, and he never left there in his mind, even though his position took him up there to where he wore a suit every day. That was the position that we need to assume sometimes. And the purpose, it's obvious. Jesus was illustrating serving and humility. That we would just lower ourselves to the point that we would take this bowl and we would take this water and we'd do one of the dirtiest jobs that is necessary. And then after that, what did he say? He said, do you have any idea what I've done to you? He says, I've given you an example. I've given you something to follow. If you're ever wondering, what should I do? Then follow my example. And it was beautiful how he did that. You and I understand that, and symbolically, we're there already. But what we have to do is we have to go much further than that. Because at the very end of that, what does he say? He says, blessed are you if you know it, but do it. He said, don't just know it, do it. What you and I don't ever want to be guilty of is just knowing it up here, but it never spills out of here. We never become more than that. And the Bible says that after this, that he took his outer garment, he put it back on, and then he went, and he began to visit with them again. And he said, just do these things. The saddest example of most people's lives is that they understand it, they know how to talk about it, they know how to define it, they know how to tell others how to do it, but they don't see it in themselves. It's that example thing. It's always clear. Jeff Stride, he's a pastor, he said this, there are some things in our life with Christ that will only be experienced through serving. Only through serving. So what can I do? Let me leave you with some practical things today, okay? Because all this is inspirational to just talk until we really do it. One thing you need to remember real quick is this. Sometimes the attitude is much more important than the action. You see, I can take a bag of cookies over to my neighbor, you know, and just kind of do the thing that I'm supposed to do. And they'll know right there whether I really care, whether I'm just obligatory, whether it's just something I should do, whether I'm there because it's a church assignment, or whether they're there because a committee decided that I'm the one that should be doing that. When we deliver meals to somebody who's lost a family member or they've been sick in the hospital, they know if you're showing up because you were the next person on the list or whether you really wanted to do this or not. It's just all in the attitude. So we need to remember that. But whatever you do, do it. Just do it. Just get active. Just do something. Here's what a lot of people like to do. They get a hold of something like this and say, you know what? I think we should study it. I think we should analyze this very carefully. Was Jesus down on the right knee first or was it the left knee? Was he left-handed or right-handed? Just how big was that towel? All of these stuff. I'm serious, there's people that go to that extent. They have Bible studies about it. They have discussion groups about it. Revolving conversation over a small group. But it never gets done. Can I just tell you, the most powerful thing in doing it is just doing it, whether you do it right or wrong. There's a lot of us that we've never done it because we're afraid we're going to do it the wrong way. We're afraid it won't be received the right way. We're afraid maybe they won't understand why we're doing this. And we stop right there, just this short of doing a powerful thing that Jesus exemplified for us, and God forbid that we don't follow through and do it. So let me give you three things that will help you with this, okay? First of all, just start thinking along these lines. Be practical. What do they need? Just be practical. You know, your neighbor, it might be really cool that you show up with a bag of cookies that you cooked all by yourself. You got that cookbook out and you did it for scratch. You're going, I didn't just go buy them some cookies. I made these cookies. Trust me, if you get cookies from me, I bought them. But no, you're all excited about this. You know what? What they probably really need is somebody to help them clean up their backyard. They probably need somebody to get that weed eater out there and trim their fence line. They probably need a little more help instead of the cookies. But thank you for the cookies. But you know what? Do something practical, something that makes sense. The second thing is be hospitable. Just help, just look ahead, just think ahead and say, what can I do for this person? A lot of you are going to leave here in just a little bit, and some of you might need some help with your car door. I hope somebody will rush over there and open your car door. Now listen, don't look at me. I haven't opened Debbie's car door in years. But let me explain. We don't ever drive in the same car. We're never in the same place at the same time. We always have separate transportation. So I'm still a nice guy, even though I haven't done that in years. But it's amazing. Do something hospitable. They may need something. Sometimes it's not about just finding the need. Sometimes the need is just finding them and say, you know what? I want to bless them today. When you drive into Quick Trip or wherever it is you gas up your car, just start looking around. There may be some elderly person that's really just having a struggle with that pump. Just go over there and help them. And if God says pull out your credit card, pull out your credit card and pay for their stinking gas, for crying out loud. There may be somebody struggling with the door. You know, I'm trying to just make sense here without being weird and all out of whack with what's going on out there. But hospitality is something that's not ever very fashionable right now. We don't talk about manners and we don't talk about just treating people nice anymore. We live in a world that says, you know what, I'm going to get in and get out and I don't care what anybody else feels. I'm going to bust it on through my way. I was watching a bus the other day. I was right behind the bus and at first, I was mad because I was behind the bus. You know how that goes. You know, my superior spirituality went, and then I go, oh, okay, you know, yeah, we don't want to kill children, so I'll slow down. So I'm behind this bus, and it cracked me up. There was about 15, 16 teenagers, and I could not believe it. They're just jockeying for position. And I saw all these guys running up there, getting in front of these girls, and I just wanted to yell, hey. I didn't know what I was going to yell next, but hey was the first thing I was going to say. Hey. You know, and I just want to go, that ain't right, you know. And then I realized they would never hear me, and then they would probably look at me like, dude, you're old, shut up. You know, I could just feel it coming, you know. But I know good well it would have been a deer in the headlights moment for these kids, because that's just what they, I just saw them just worming up there. I'll go, that cannot believe that. Okay, so I'm old, who gives a rip? But that's the way it was. Be hospitable. The next thing is this. Sometimes, instead of asking what, we need to be asking who. Who does God want me to serve? You know what? Here's Brother Rolla Griffith. He's standing right there. He is not asleep, ladies and gentlemen. He closes his eyes so he can hear better because he's half deaf, all right? But when I look at this guy, I'm going, oh, he needs a lot of help. And it's not because he's the oldest guy in here. It's not because he's on the edge of death. This guy walks like 4 miles a day, for crying out loud. There's a lot of stuff he doesn't know. But you know what? If I look at him, there's a whole set of dynamic that goes with him. There's a whole picture that I see there. I see him as a person, and I see him as whatever he might need instead of, that's just Rolla Griffith. I look around, and I see these teenagers. I know what they need. They need a spanking. There you go. Now they're going, you really are old, Pastor. When you look at the person instead of what can I do, because a lot of times we try to define it by this issue. Should I pick up this? Should I do that? Should I pay for this? Should I go there? Should I cook a meal? Look at the person and it'll define before you immediately. And you know what? When you see who, there's a person, there's a conversation, there's a personality, there's a family, there's a dynamic that we're missing. You know what this is called? It's called relationship. It's hard to serve somebody else. It's hard to serve somebody else with humility unless you know them. We just talked about church membership. Don't you dare lead these people at arm's length. You embrace them. You get close to them. You draw them into your life. You know, you don't have to know everything about them. We're not going to send out a quiz, do you know this person? But the more you know them, the more those opportunities will open. We need to start asking who instead of what. And let me tell you something. It is never too late to serve. It is never too late to serve. I found this powerful illustration. It was about a missionary who'd been in Africa for 40 years. He had buried his wife and his two children in Africa. He was retiring, came back home, and when his flight landed in the United States, he looked out and there was this huge crowd. There was these banners, welcome home, and he thought, you got to be kidding me. After all this time, there's actually going to be somebody there to receive me, and he kind of got excited about it. But then he found out there was a senator on the same flight, and he was returning from a trip to Africa, and all of that reception was from him. And as he sat there and let that entourage get off the plane, and he saw everybody hooping, hollering, nobody there for him, he said, Dear Father, he said, I've served you long and hard, given you 40 years of my life, left my wife and children in a foreign soil. Is it wrong to ask that maybe I would have a welcome home after all these years? And he said, as he sat there, he heard the Lord almost audibly say, not at all. He said, but the problem is, you're not home yet. You're not home yet. God forbid that we measure serving, no matter how humble we are, by human efforts and by earthly standards. But that we understand that the greatest thing that we're looking for, the trophy, the prize, the words that we want to hear more than anything else, are not going to be spoke here. They're not going to be recognized here. They're not going to be championed here. They're going to be when we walk through that gate, if you will, and we hear those words. What are they? Well done. That's going to be the trophy of all trophies. It's going to be the moment of all moments. It's going to make it all worthwhile. But God forbid that well done be reserved for someone else, when all along we had the tools, we had the power, we had the opportunity. We never performed the act. We never put ourselves in position to minister to somebody because we never saw the purpose. Who do you need to serve? You may not know that answer, but if you don't walk out of here going, who, you'll never see them. They'll walk right by you. Literally, they will walk this close to you and you'll never sense their presence. They'll be right there and you'll be oblivious to it. Now, that's the scene you will see later on in life when God is going to go, it was right there. And it might be a moment when we say, God, when did I do that for you? Remember that story in the Bible? That cold cup of water, that fine gesture. You visited somebody and was sick. You went to prison. He said, when you did it the least of them, you did it for me. So who can I serve? What can I do? I hope that those questions are just burning on our heart as we leave today. Will you do me a favor and bow your heads and close your eyes with me? And ask the worship team to come back quickly before we dismiss today. I'd like you to go ahead and ask those questions right now in your mind and your heart before we leave. It's 10 minutes before 12. So you know wherever you're going to eat, guess what? They'll still be there when you get there. But if you don't ask these two questions, that who or that what might be waiting on you at that restaurant or on your way there, and you may miss it if you don't ask that question right now under the direction of the Holy Spirit. And some of you, you've already been through your neighborhood. You've been through your relatives. You've been through your routine. Some of you have gone to work in the last few minutes. If you've examined yourself as a supervisor or a co-worker or whatever, and God is asking you to look through those lenses a little bit closer and to see it whole differently. You've seen the way you've treated your neighbor, maybe your husband or your wife. Maybe you've seen someone very, very familiar. You see them every day. Are they the who? Is God telling you what to do for them? I believe there's powerful, powerful possibilities in all this. Easter's coming up. It's going to be a powerful time. People are going to be very, very open to the gospel. But they want to see it a lot more than they want to hear it. I hope this place is filled. I hope that we give people plenty of opportunity to accept an invitation to come to this church. But you know what? They don't want to see a sermon. I mean, they don't want to hear a sermon. They want to see it. They want to experience it. They want to call it their own. We're just going to worship this song just for a few moments. Continue to ask that question. And ask the Lord to give you those faces and those names, those opportunities, those possibilities. Begin to see yourself in that position. Fulfilling an act of service with great humility. And just wait and let the blessings flow. Amen.